So today is sort of a sad day. We're at the edge of the 100-acre woods. This is the last sermon in this series. I promise you, next week when you come in, all the lovely little stuffed animals that have been staring at you now for 7 or 8 weeks, they will be gone. We'll be planning for the next thing that we're going to do. But I want to, as we get to the edge and this last character that we're going to talk about today, I want to recap where we've been. Because it's important that you realize this was not just some kind of cute idea that we had to say, hey, look, it'll be cute if we could put Winnie the Pooh characters up on the stage and find out ways to preach about the characters, because we're not preaching about the characters. If you haven't figured it out yet, we're preaching to ourselves. You see, we entered the woods at Mr. Pooh's house under the name of Sanderson. If you don't know that, you'll have to go read the book, but that's the name that he had above his house. And we found Pooh, and he was stuck. He was stuck in his honeypot, indulging his life as he saw fit, lacking self-control, lacking the ability to quit being stuck in the honeypot. And from that, we drew the analogy and the equation into our life that this is how a lot of times we deal with sin in our life. We just stay stuck. We refuse to deal with the real issue on the inside of our life, and we just keep trying to change our behavior and push the honeypot away, only to find ourselves stuck back in it. And so we decided that if we're going to deal with the stuck issue, we're going to have to change our belief and be willing to call it what it is. Sin is sin, and I need to be able to deal with it just like that. Then as we stopped by Piglet's house, and we began to talk about the idea of worry. And all of us worry, is what we found out. There isn't a single person here that doesn't worry at some point in their life. Even those of us who think we're above it, we worry. We do. And what we found out is that worry really isn't an issue. The issue is that we don't trust God enough to be God. So I need to take control of things, and when I take control of things, then I have to worry about them. You see, worry is all about trust. And so if we don't trust, then we become like Piglet, and we allow our house to become flooded with our worries, and eventually everything washes away from us. Then as we went by Rabbit's house, we came face to face with our plans. And this is one that was real close to my life because I'm a plan maker. Oh, I plan everything. I have a to-do list for to-do lists. It's just the way my life works. And so I make these plans, and then the funny thing is God laughs at my plans because my plans never work out the way that I planned them. And of course, that frustrates me, and I become obsessed with making my plan work. And this is very much how we see Rabbit in the books of Winnie the Pooh, is he's an obsessed worker, and everything has to go just right or else Rabbit's life just doesn't work. And from that, we came to the conclusion that, you know what, we need to realize that in order to make our plans work, our plans have to be part of God's plan and not God just part of our plan. We have to turn our life around. Then as we went to Mother's Day and we stopped by Kangaroo's house and we began to look at who we really think God is, and the conclusion that you have to come to is that God isn't just this big, mean, scary God that's looking to take out his wrath on you. God has a kind of a motherly side to him. He has a side that wants to nurture us and wants to comfort us and wants to take care of us, so much so that he was willing to sacrifice his one and only son just so that we could have a relationship. God is very much into the nurturing and forgiveness business, and we need to remember that. Then came our contentment week. We stopped by, well, we didn't stop by Tigger's house because remember, he doesn't have one. So we met up with Tigger bouncing through the woods, and we found out that Tigger is never satisfied because Tigger doesn't even know who Tigger is. As a matter of fact, Tigger actually thinks he's a plural because when he sings his song, Tiggers are wonderful things. And so we began to talk about Tigger and how we are never satisfied, we are never content with our life. And we came to the conclusion that the reason we're never content with our life is because, once again, we want it to be my life. We're not just satisfied with what God has blessed us with. We always want more and more and more. And the funny thing is we don't really want the more. Really what we want is just the thrill that we get from acquiring more. So we had this idea with Tigger, and then as we left Tigger, we had that depressing week where we stopped by at Eeyore's little tent shack, and there he was, and he was having one of those despairing moments. And the problem with Eeyore is that he lacks hope. He doesn't see that anything's ever going to get better, anything's ever going to change, anything's ever going to be significantly better than it is today. And a lot of times as Christians, we live our life the same way. We think what it is what it is, and that's all it can ever be. And we don't understand that we've got our hope in the wrong thing. We placed our hope here in this world and how things are going, and up and down it goes. If we would remember that our hope is there with Christ, things work much differently. And so now we've got all of these characters left, and if you look up on the stage, you're thinking, okay, that's everybody on the stage. Well, the last character, we couldn't find a stuffed one. We just couldn't do it. So you're just going to have to realize the last character is one that is probably one of the least known and least familiarized and least liked characters in the Hundred Acre Woods. I'm scared how loud this is going to be, so be ready, David.
Hang on tight, Piglet.
Who is it?
It's me. Please, may I come in?
Well, I say now, someone has pasted Piglet on my window. Well, well, poo-too. Do come in and make yourselves comfortable.
No.
Am I correct in assuming it's a rather blustery day outside?
Yes, sir, Owl. It's a very, very blustery day.
That reminds me. Happy Wednesday, Owl.
My good fellow. I wouldn't go as far as to call it a Wednesday.
Look. Is there honey in that pot?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Help yourself. Now, as I was saying, this is just a mild spring zephyr compared to the big wind of 67. Oh, I remember the big blue well.
I'll remember this one, too.
It was the year my Aunt Clara went to visit her cousin. Now, her cousin was not only gifted on the glockenspiel, but being a screech owl, also sang soprano with the London Opera.
Thank you, Bennett.
You see, her constant practicing so unnerved my aunt that she laid a seagull egg by mistake. Well, I say now, someone has... Who did you do that?
I don't think so.
Today we stop by and we visit with Owl. Now, usually when we hear the word owl and we think animals, we think owls are wise. Not so much with this owl. I mean, he's an intellect. He studies a lot. He likes to read. He knows a lot. As a matter of fact, some might even say he's a know-it-all. Unfortunately, his knowledge sometimes misses the mark. And, well, what Owl ends up doing is chattering. Talk. If you get him started, story after story after story after story, and talk after talk after talk after talk. In fact, he's talking so much he doesn't even realize his own house is blowing over. Don't you find that surprising that he's so busy with his conversation that, well, he doesn't even realize his own life is about to be turned upside down? And so this morning, as we stop by this last house and we talk about Owl, we want to talk about the subject of idle chatter. Now, let's break these words apart for just a second, just so you can understand what idle chatter is all about. You see, idle chatter is, you have a car, right? If you have a car and you stop at a stoplight, you don't have your foot on the gas, you have your foot on the brake, and it's just kind of sitting there, and it's idling. And what that means is that, well, the engine is running, the potential is there for it to go somewhere, but right now, it's just stuck. It's not moving forward, and it's not moving backward. It's just sitting there in one place, running and running and running and running. That's the idea of idle. And when you combine that with the idea of chatter, and chatter is using your voice, it's putting something out there, coming out of your mouth. And so what we have here is that we're just sitting in one place and our mouths are just running and running and running and running and running. That's the topic I want to talk about this morning. And the thing is the misconception about idle chatter is it's not important as much as what I say, but what I do. We have statements in our lives. We say sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. We often tell people, do as I say, not as I do. You see, we want people to understand that they just look at my life, but my words, they are not that big of a deal. But we need to realize that words, they are a powerful thing. This is what James chapter 3, verses 3 through 6 says about our words, our tongues, our mouths. We put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us. We can turn the whole animal. Or we can take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder whenever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set afire. It is by a very small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body and sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and it's itself set on fire by hell. Now, I read that, and I understand exactly what James is saying, what he's trying to prove to us. You see, I can live my life perfectly. I can do all the things that I'm supposed to do. I can come to church every single Sunday. I can read my Bible every single day. I can have a prayer life like you would not believe, but if what comes out of my mouth does not reflect what I say my life is, then you know what? Nobody's going to believe me. You see, because your mouth, your voice, your chatter, what you say represents exactly what you are. As a matter of fact, your chatter, it impacts you as well. It isn't just what I say can hurt other people. What I say can actually hurt myself. Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth is what defiles them." That's a harsh thing to realize in our world. In a world where we have Facebook posts and billboards, and we have Twitter, and we have text, and we have email, and all of the days about communication have changed. I was talking with Rich this morning, and back in his day, you know what they did? They wrote letters. I cannot tell you the last time I wrote a letter. Okay. As a matter of fact, did you know that they have actually redefined what a letter is? It used to be that when email first came along, email was not considered a legal form of communication. If you wanted to actually have it legal, you had to put it through the mail so it could get the postmark stamp. Nowadays, email is just as important, just as legal as something that goes through the mail. And actually, there are new laws coming that when you text something back and forth in attachment, they're going to make that a legal form of communication here soon, so that you can actually begin to text your documents back and forth, and those count as legal documents at this point. So our world of communication is changing drastically, and the thing is the more it changes, the more we chatter, the more we talk, but the less we communicate. You see, there's just so much out there now that it's hard for me to push through all of that's there. And Jesus tells us that what comes out of my mouth, and by the way, that means what comes out of my email chain, what comes out of my Facebook posts, what comes out of my Twitter account, whatever comes out of what I write down, whatever comes out of me in verbal form, it can defile me. So that makes this idea of chatter, of understanding chatter, very important in our life, because we all like to talk. I don't care who you are. At some point in your life, you like to sit down and have a conversation. So this morning, there's a lot of blanks in your bulletin, and they're just blanks because we're going to go through, and we're going to go through Scripture, and we're going to find all the different kinds of communication that God warns us in His Word not to use, and we're going to identify them and understand what they are, and then we're going to make some implications about what it is when we don't pay attention to our chatter, what happens. The first ones that we're going to look at in these types of chatter, you'll find it in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 4. Paul mentions three, and here's what they are. Nor should there be any obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. So Paul mentions the idea of obscenity. I don't have to give you examples, but you understand what an obscenity is. Paul says that we should not have these as part of our language on a regular basis. Now, that means that when you hit your thumb with the hammer, you need to find something else to say, I guess, because we know that those things slip out, but they should not be a habit as part of our language. And we like to preach against this one, the idea that you shouldn't use four-letter words. You shouldn't say this or you shouldn't say that, removing words from our vocabulary. But Paul takes it one step forward here. He says, by the way, not only obscenity, there should be no foolish talk. We shouldn't make foolish statements. We should not make promises we could not keep. We should not be saying things that just don't make sense. We should not say things that make things confusing. There just should be no foolish talk when it comes to our communication between one another and our communication with the world. What we say should be true and trustworthy. And then he gets into the idea of coarse joking. Now, I like jokes. I do. Okay, my kids will tell you, I like those pun jokes, you know, where words can mean two different things. And I usually get the eye rolls and the groans and the sighs from my family when I try to make a joke because I'm not very good at telling jokes. But there is this idea of coarse joking. And closest thing I can call it is locker room conversation. You know, you're in those private moments and nobody really hears. And so you make a joke. And the joke is at someone else's expense. Usually it's by somebody, the way that they're living, or the way that they're dressed, or maybe the color of their skin, maybe the color of their hair, maybe something that you don't think anything about it. But Paul tells us that as Christians, what comes out of our mouth, that we should not be downing people to bring ourselves up. There should be no coarse joking for the simple sake of making a joke at somebody else's expense. And already that impacts our speech right away because all of us do these kind of things, every single one of us. But he takes it a bigger step when we go into 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 14. Keep reminding. Now, I want you to see that right there. This is not a one-time thing. This is not like, now, don't do that, and then we just got to go. Paul tells us we have to keep reminding. Who do we need to keep reminding? God's people of these things. Isn't that odd? We have to keep reminding God's people of this issue with our mouths. It says, warn them before God against quarreling about words. It is of no value and only ruins those who listen. You see, we have this thing in our society that we like to be right. And so we begin to split hairs on words and definitions. And then if somebody doesn't say it the exact way that I want it said, if somebody doesn't use the exact word that I want to hear, then we begin to try to correct that person. And then between two Christians, we can actually have a quarrel over a simple word. And Paul is saying, keep reminding them, there's no value to that. This idea that we have to have this perfect semantic between all of us, that everybody has to be this cookie-cutter Christian and say everything the exact same way, Paul says, don't do that. As a matter of fact, all that's going to do is hurt the people that are trying to listen to your message because they're not going to listen to you. What are they going to listen to? Well, everybody loves a good argument, right? They're going to listen to the words that are coming out of your mouth and how you can't even agree with each other on this one simple thing. And then guess what happens? It ruins our message. See, this idea of quarreling is not a good thing, but we tend to do it in Christian churches all across our lives. We tend there and we want people to say things exactly as we want them to say it. And if they don't say it the way that I say it, then I have to correct them. I have to make sure they understand my way is the right way. And our chatter, it puts everybody in idle at that point. Nobody's moving forward. Nobody's moving back. All we're doing is just sitting there having an argument. Paul goes on in 2 Timothy to give us another kind of chatter that he's concerned about. It says, avoid godless chatter because those who indulge in it will become more than ungodly. So what is godless chatter? Does that mean everything I should say that comes out of my mouth should always be about God? Well, no. Because this afternoon, we're going to go and probably get something to eat at some point. And when we sit down and get something to eat, I'm going to order food. And I'm not going to say, I would like some of the Holy Spirit casserole and some of the Jesus French fries. No, I'm going to talk about what I want to have to eat. Godless chatter is things that when we talk about things that are respectful and we treat them in a very disrespectful manner. It's flippancy. It's the idea that I can just talk about something and make it insignificant, even though it's a significant topic. And we do this a lot of times with God. We reduce God to something that's nothing more than chatter in our life. And Paul is saying, don't do this. If you're participating in godless chatter, things that just lead you away from God, then these are the kind of things that you need to think about how to give up in your life. Because it does no good except for to make you ungodly. In Romans chapter 1, verse 29, he picks up quite a few little words when it comes to our mouths. They have become with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, malice, and depravity. They are, listen to this, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips. Now, we like to talk about gossip. We like to gossip, let's be honest. But we like to talk about how we should not gossip. But Paul makes a very important observation that we need to see about this word gossip. Gossip doesn't start as gossip. As a matter of fact, Paul says gossip can start as envy. You look at somebody else's life and God is blessing them. And so you got to find some way to pull them back down to the earth. So we begin to tell a story. Or maybe even if it's a truth, we begin to restate that truth over and over again. Because what we're trying to do is we are envious of their life. And so we want everybody to understand they're no better than me. So I begin to tell a little story here, a little story there, tear them down just a moment here, a moment there, until they are my equal. And it's all started by envy. It can start by strife. You have a disagreement with one another, and that person says something about you, and so you're upset at them, so then you know what? You have a prayer request. And you go to one of your Christian brothers or sisters, and you share how that person has treated you badly and upset you, and the first thing you know, now that person is upset at the person that said something to you, and then we go to the next person, we do the same thing. This is how gossip works, but it all began with a disagreement, with strife. Something was said to me that upset me, and well, I can't have that, so I have to go and I have to chat about it. Paul says it can become from deceit. We can become gossips because in our hearts, we're liars. We want everybody to think that we are somebody, and so we say things that don't sometimes have a grain of truth to them, but yet we say it just because we want it to make ourselves look better. Paul says it can happen because of malice. Now, malice is a little different from strife because strife is something that happens in the moment. Malice is something that you store up. It's a funny story. I think I've told this story here again before, but I'm going to tell it again. There was a time in the church that I came from that we had two senior citizens classes. And one class was called the Joy class, and the other one was called, I forget what it was called at this point, but they were there, and one met downstairs and one met upstairs, and we were getting ready to turn the church portable. So that means where we were going, we were going to have limited space, so we needed to get classes to combine. And so the elders went to these Sunday school classes like, we need your classes to combine. I don't think so. Why? Well, we haven't been together in a Sunday school class for 40 years. Why? Well, something happened. What? I don't know, but something happened, and this class split from this class, and so now we've got two classes that don't talk to each other all because of some. They stored up malice, and then they could not even be in the same Sunday school class together, and eventually we're like, well, that's fine, but there's only going to be one room, so either you have to divide the room or figure it out, and eventually they did figure it out. But they had stored up all this malice in their heart from years of things that had happened in the past, and they just talked about one another. It was crazy. But they began to understand that, you know what? That's gossip. You see, a lot of times we want to get rid of gossip in the church, but we don't want to deal with the issues of envy, strife, deceit, and malice because those are the things that cause it. So Paul tells us here that to get rid of it. If you have strife, settle it. If you have malice, dig it up. If you have envy, then go deal with it. Because if not, that's going to produce gossip, which is, again, nothing more than idle chatter. Doesn't move you forward, doesn't move you backwards. In 1 Timothy, we get a couple more here. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 13, besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house, and not only do they become idlers, but they also busybodies. Who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to. Now these are people that, well, they're not really gossips. They just get a piece of information, and because they think they are now in the know, they have to go share that information with somebody else. See, they make themselves busybody, getting involved in people's lives where they're not supposed to be. And then when they find out information, they have the need to go share it with somebody else. And Paul says, this is nonsense talk. I mean, it doesn't do anything good except for you're trying to make yourself feel better. You're like Owl, sitting there in the rocking chair, back and forth. You're just talking and talking and talking because you have a story and you want somebody to pay attention to you, and you become a busybody. And the problem is that busybody can then turn around and sow seeds of envy, strife, deceit, malice, which eventually become gossip, which puts us back right where we started. So Paul specifically addresses this idea of busybodiedness. Now, the idea behind this is as a church, we do need to care about one another's lives, but we aren't supposed to be to the point where we're just trying to be nosy. There's a difference between being concerned about somebody's life and being nosy about what's going on. And so Paul tells the church, you are okay to be concerned. If you see somebody that's struggling in their life, be concerned. But don't be busybodies about it to the point that you're just concerned about getting the information so you can share it with the next person down the line. I think this is very good for us to think about in our environment today, because there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of talk. And since there are so many forums out there for us to talk in, we need a lot of information so that we can fill up all of this talk that we're doing. And I think a lot of us get involved in this, that we have to accumulate the information and we start sharing the information, that we don't even think about the implications that we're giving as other people are listening to the church's chatter. And I think the message of Jesus has been lost in all of the chatter that's coming from the church. Now, the good news is that there was a very wise man that lived long ago. His name was Solomon. And Solomon wrote a book. Well, he wrote a couple books. One of them I'm not really thinking I'm going to ever do a sermon from here in the pulpit, but he did write a book. It's called Proverbs. And in it, amazingly, he talks a great deal about how to have wise speech. So what I want to do is, now that we've looked at the things that we should not do, the things that cause us to just be idle chatterers, now I want to take a look at the things that Solomon says that we could do to help our speech be more effective, to help our message be more clear. And he begins in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 3. It says, those who guard their lips preserve their lives, but those who speak rashly will come to ruin. Folks, don't speak just for speaking's sake. Don't talk just because you think you need to hear your own voice. You see, when you speak, make sure you have something to say that's worth saying. And if you don't have something that's worth saying, don't speak. There was a man that once said, what is it? Don't speak and let everybody think you're a fool. It's better to not speak and everybody think you're a fool than to speak and everybody think you are and know you are a fool. You see, you need to understand, only speak when you actually have something to say. And we move on to Proverbs chapter 15, verse 4. This is what Solomon tells us. The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but the perverse tongue crushes the spirit. We need to evaluate the results of our speech. When I say something, it is my responsibility to understand what I said and how it impacts the person I said it to. There was a story once told me about a young man who had a problem with his tongue. He liked to tell stories. He liked to tell lies. And finally, one day, his grandfather took a feather pillow, and he took the young man out to the woods, and he had the young man rip that pillow open and wave the pillow until all the feathers were gone. And then he looked at the young man. He said, now I'd like you to go gather all the feathers. Of course, the wind had blown them all over the place. There was no way he was ever going to gather all of those feathers back. And then the grandfather looked at him and says, I need you to understand. This is how your words work. Once they go out of your mouth, they will do something. They will land somewhere. And you need to realize you can never get them back. You have to evaluate your speech and what comes out of it. And in that light, we got to think about Proverbs chapter 15, verse 22. The heart of a righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. Folks, we have to think before we speak. Think about what you're about to say and how is it going to impact what you're doing. What are people going to think about you after you say what you say? And is it worth the damage? Because we can't always fix it. You see, this idea of speech, it's amazing how much the Bible has to say about it. Because God understands we are a people. We like to talk. Solomon also addresses the idea of gossip in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 28. A perverse person stirs up conflict and gossip and separates close friends. In other words, don't be looking to create conflict or gossip. Don't go looking for it. And that is something that I think we can do very easily. We try to create conflict because all of us like a good drama, right? And here's why. Because a good drama gives us more action, which gives us more to talk about, which gives us more conversation and more information that we pour out there. So a lot of times we are creating our conflict just so we have something to talk about. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 8. The words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the innermost parts. Once again, he's trying to bring out the idea that once you have said something and somebody gets a hold of it, it goes into them and you can never get it back. You can't go to somebody and say, can you please forget what I said? You can ask them to forgive you for what that you said. But just so you know, in the human nature, there is no such thing as forgive and forget. Your brain forgets nothing. I know you, as you get older, you think it does. But it has the potential to store all of your life's moments inside of you. Every word that's ever said to you, you can store it up. And don't believe me? Let something happen a few years down the road and you can recall that moment right off the bat. I remember when you said that to me, it was like in 1949 and you said this and it was on a Monday at 12 o'clock and we remember it all. We need to remember how important our words are because they enter into people and they never go away. We caution our kids all the time about the internet. Careful what you post on the internet because it never goes away. Adults, we need to remember the same thing about our words. Be careful what you say, because it never goes away. As we move forward in Proverbs, we get to Proverbs chapter 20, verse 19. It says, gossip betray the confidence, so avoid anyone who talks too much. Now, that sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it? But there is a principle here that's important. If you have somebody that is a loose talker, that is an idle chatter, that is causing deceit and envy and malice, the Bible is very clear. Don't get near them. Avoid them. Don't engage them in conversation. And there is a logic behind it. You're not being mean, but you understand if you don't engage a person in conversation like that, then guess what? They ain't got nobody to talk to. And then if they have nobody to talk to, then they cannot do the things that they were trying to do. Even though they may have been innocent in what they were trying to do, they just have to understand, look, we're not going down this path. If you're going to start a gossip session, you're going to be gossiping to the brick wall outside because I'm not staying. If more of us took that approach in our life, think about what would happen to the church. Our language would be so much better because our message would be so clear because we would not be participating in conversations that do no good except for to cause us to separate. You see, there is a major truth about chatter. Listen to Matthew chapter 12, verses 35 through 37. A good man brings things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. But I tell you that everyone will have to give an account on that day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. That's a verse that we probably don't want to mark in our Bibles too often. But there is a principle that Jesus is trying to get us here. You see, what goes in will eventually come out. If you stuff your life full of gossip, if you stuff your life full of idle chatter, if you stuff your life full of useless information, then Jesus tells us, guess what? That's what's going to go in, and that's what's going to come out. We have a principle for this in the IT world. We call it garbage in, garbage out. If you give me bad data to process, I promise you I will give you bad results out of the program, no matter how good of a programmer I am. We need to understand our input is important as our output. If I feast on nothing but McDonald's, then guess what's going to come out? Not the things I want. My speech works the same way. The other truth that you need to remember, and this is one that we just want to forget sometimes, we are responsible for what you say. Think about this for a second. What if that verse was literal? And when you get to heaven, the first thing Jesus is going to do is push the spiritual tape recorder, and through your entire life, he's going to play back every idle word that you said. How long would you have to stand in line? For me, you might be there for a while. I understand my problems. But we need to realize that we are responsible. If we said it, then we are responsible for what we say. Even if the way it was received was not accurate, we are still responsible for what came out of my mouth. And those are important things for us to remember as we are leaving the 100-acre woods, talking about mind what we say. Take the things that we've learned with us and allow our message to be clear. Two things I want to remind you of as we leave this particular sermon. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, we need to change our input. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. If you want to clean up your chatter, if you want to make your words more effective, then make your input more effective. Focus on the things that God has put out there. A lot of times we turn on the news and we get focused on all the problems that there are in the world, and it impacts our speech. God says, you know what? I'm a great God. I provided you many things. Focus on those things, and guess what? The output will also change. Do not let your unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building up others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Effective communication is all about the listener. Effective communication is not about chatter, it's about learning how to speak. Speak in such a way that what you say you believe, what you say you live, comes out of your mouth in such a way that it conveys a message that will point others to Christ. Isn't that what we're after? See, we need to remember my words. What's more powerful, the pen or the sword? My words, they can change somebody's perception of me in an instant, and I can never switch it back. My words, they can change somebody's perception of Jesus in an instant, and it will never be changed back. We end this sermon series here because I want us to be in a church that is effective to reaching people for Christ. And that begins with us becoming an effective source of speech. Not just chatter, not just information, but stuff out, things that are out there that can actually lead people toward a relationship in Christ. We are going to do a time of decision. And this morning, I know that the gospel message is not better than the nice little points out there, but if you're here this morning and you know what, you don't know who Jesus is, who this person is that we're trying to make our speech improve for, then come on forward. We'll sit down and help you understand who Jesus is. We'll turn the pages of Scripture. We'll speak where God speaks. But this morning, I want to point this little time of decision as more of the people that were here. And our numbers are smaller this morning because we're in that summer slump that every church seems to go through. But that's okay because this is a message that we as a church need to hear. And during this time of decision, maybe this is where you need to start thinking about what it is that's coming out of your mouth. And ask yourself the question, does it bring people toward Christ or away from Christ? And if the answer is away, then maybe this is the time of decision that you and God need to settle things up and you need to say, God, I'm tired of chatting. I'm ready to speak for you. Would you please stand? We're going to pray, and then we're going to sing.